imperial leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. The year is 1915. At the Admiralty, Winston Churchill is in charge of the naval operations in the Great War. The Dardanelles Enterprise is under consideration by the British Cabinet. The Secretary for War, Lord Kitchener, and Winston Churchill have many preliminary discussions. Churchill's conception of the assault has been limited to a naval attack. But there are other views, other conceptions.
Churchill, I've just had a telegram from General Birdwood, an officer in whom I have the greatest confidence. He says, I am very doubtful if the Navy can force the passage unassisted.
I still adhere to the integrity of the naval plan, Lord Kitchener. Besides, when I asked for the 29th Division, you refused to let me have them.
At that time, it seemed impossible to spare any troops. But now, the situation has eased a little on the Western Front. I'm quite prepared to send the 29th.
For what purpose?
To storm the Gallipoli Peninsula. Though not alone, of course. There are two Australian divisions in Egypt, and the French are willing to send a division.
You intend to make it a major military operation?
A combined military and naval operation. Birdwood says you can't force the passage unaided. And even if you did, what would follow? The British fleet would enter the Sea of Marmora. That's all.
You forget the political results. If a naval attack succeeded, I believe the Greeks would join us, and that we should have the whole of their armies at our disposal thenceforward. I also believe that there'd be political reactions in Turkey itself. She might even surrender or withdraw to Asia. Bulgaria might come in with us. And lastly, there is the original object of this plan, to give relief to Russia.
All supposition, Churchill. If the naval attack fails, we must try a military move. If the naval attack is successful, some military action becomes all the more necessary.
But you were so opposed to sending troops when I suggested it before. Now you've changed your mind completely.
Circumstances have changed my mind. And I might say that Sir Henry Jackson, or one of your own men, agrees with me. And Fisher is most enthusiastic.
Another man who appears to have changed his mind. You may remember that at the January meeting of the War Council, he was dead against the whole business.
Oh, that was because he thought the Navy alone was to be concerned. Now he's arguing that the Gallipoli Peninsula be stopped and held by the army.
You assume full responsibility for any military operations that might take place?
I do.
Good. I assume equal responsibility for the naval operations. And now, let's get on with it as quickly as we can.
And so a plan conceived in the minds of the British Cabinet, a naval attack on the Dardanelles, is launched. Then, April the 25th. In the dim light of early dawn, vague outlines of boats approaching the shore of Gallipoli. As the craft ground, dim shapes leap for shore. Soon after, a score of figures with packs and guns. A deathly silence, a prelude to things to come. Suddenly, hell breaks loose from the heights. Bullets and high explosives rain across the water. Hundreds of those dim figures never reach the shore. Arevenio is aflame. An endless stream of men comes on, undaunted by the Holocaust. Across the strip of sand, they race to storm the cliffs. With cold steel, they drive the enemy from their strong posts and dig in on foreign soil. This is the day of the Anzacs, 1915.
Churchill, I'm calling you by telephone as I'm anxious to know if anything has come through. Any news?
Yes, Kitchener. I've just had a telegram from Admiral de Robeck giving an account of the Gallipoli landing.
What are the details?
Hamilton began his descent on the peninsula at dawn on April the 25th. The 29th Division made five separate and simultaneous landings at V Beach, W Beach, X Beach, Y Beach, and S Beach. At the same time, the Australians made a landing a mile farther north than they intended, at a small bay called Arevenu. It was a magnificent piece of work, De Robeck says. And in all, 29,000 men have been landed.
That's splendid. The landing was the most difficult part of it. The rest should follow swiftly.
There's been terrific fighting and very heavy losses. I think large reinforcements should be sent at once.
More troops?
I should say it was essential for Sir Ian Hamilton to receive large reinforcements from Egypt and possibly from here also.
Impossible. I can't spare another man.
Wait till the casualty lists begin to come in. Then perhaps you'll change your mind. I'll call and see you later on. Goodbye for the present. Can't spare another man after an epic such as that. 60,000 men backed by the most powerful navy in the world attack a shore which nature seemed to have made impregnable and which is held by at least twice that number of the enemy in positions prepared for months and supported by the latest modern artillery. On paper, the thing was impossible, as the Turkish army order announced. By the textbooks, no man should have reached the beaches alive. But what did Ian Hamilton say? It involved difficulties for which no precedent is forthcoming in military history. Now Kitchener says he can't spare another man. Well, whatever may come, whatever be the judgment of posterity on our plan and our execution, this Battle of the Landing will be acclaimed as a mighty feat of arms.
Mr. Prime Minister, I am far from satisfied with the situation in the Middle East. I was induced to participate in the Dardanelles operations on the assurances of the Navy that they would force the passage. Now I learn that the Queen Elizabeth is to be withdrawn at the very moment when I have committed my army to a great operation on the Gallipoli Peninsula, and when that army is struggling for its life with its back to the sea.
I was against the Dardanelles operation from the beginning. Both the Prime Minister and Lord Kitchener knew that fact, Will.
Yes, Lord Fisher. We are not attempting to blame you.
What has the First Lord to say?
If I had known 3 months ago that an army of 80,000 or 100,000 men would be available in May for an attack on the Dardanelles, the attack by the Navy alone would never have been undertaken. Those naval operations do not depend and have never depended upon the Queen Elizabeth. The withdrawal of that ship will not affect the naval support of the army in any way. But the support most badly needed by that army is reinforcements. They should be sent immediately.
Sir John French needs all the reinforcements I can give him in France. In addition, there's a serious threat of invasion. At least 4 divisions must be reserved for home defense.
The Admiralty is of the opinion that no landing could be effected here. And if it were made, that it could not possibly be sustained or nourished. As for the Western Front, I suggest that these vain offensives be stopped until the new armies are ready and sufficient ammunition accumulated.
And leave Sir John French in the lurch?
Give him the new divisions he asks for, but otherwise remain on the defensive in France and send every man you can spare to Gallipoli. After such a magnificent feat of arms as that landing, the men on that peninsula must not be deserted. That is of such vital importance that I cannot repeat my request nor emphasize it too much. More troops, more reinforcements for Gallipoli, and victory may yet attend our efforts.
Winston, you're tired. I haven't seen you looking so worn for many a day.
Tired, dejected, and thoroughly depressed. Wrangling at the cabinet. Arguments, differences of opinion.
About Gallipoli?
Yes. I want reinforcements, and Kitchener refuses. How can we desert those gallant men who made the landing on that treacherous peninsula?
Oh, you should rest now, Winston. Perhaps you'll feel more like attacking your problems later on this evening.
Yes, I'll feel better after a few hours here with you, Clementine. But there is a task yet I want to do. Rupert Brooke is dead.
Rupert Brooke, the poet? How sad.
He died on active service at Skyos. This is the last line he ever wrote. The silence following great words of peace.
The silence following great words of peace.
I'm going to write his obituary for the Times.
Let me stay with you while you write.
I have some notes penciled here. Let me see now.
Oh, yes. There they are. During the last few months of his life, months of preparation in gallant comradeship and open air, the poet-soldier told with all the simple force of genius the sorrow of youth about to die, and the sure triumphant consolations of a sincere and valiant spirit. He expected to die for the dear England whose beauty and majesty he knew. And he advanced towards the brink in perfect serenity, with absolute conviction of the rightness of his country's cause, and a heart devoid of hate for fellow men.
A lovely tribute, Winston.
Remember his words, Clementine. They reflect the spirit of our soldiers today. Men, young and old, soldiers from far corners, the soldiers of Gallipoli. If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England.
The epic of the Dardanelles draws to a close. Through vacillation, War Office muddle, and the failure to carry any plan to its conclusion, the whole campaign collapses. Turkey triumphs. Bulgaria joins the Central Powers. The war is prolonged for 3 more years. Russia crashes, and the flower of the world's youth is sacrificed on the battlefields of France, Flanders, and Galicia.